No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Baseball Insiders Prospect Edition. I am Adam Weiner, joined, as I am every Tuesday, by FanSided's prospect guru, Eric Cole. Last week, we skipped trade deadline madness too crazy. Now, recapping that trade deadline, which prospects went to new places and get new opportunities, who are you surprised did not move, who's still blocked where they are, and who are we going to actually see in the second half? I talked to Robert Murray about this explicitly over the weekend. If you have not watched our live shows from the National, you should. Both of us are bummed that Bubba Chandler's still not coming up because you've got to give Andrew Heaney those starts. You just absolutely have to. But there are plenty of other prospects who are going to get a chance to shine. We'll talk about risers and fallers for the past week of action as we always do. But of course, talking mostly about movement. Eric Cole, are you recovering? How are you recovering from the trade deadline? Are you recovering? Do you even want to recover? Do you still just want to be living in this world right now?
Oh, I want to recover. For those that aren't aware, like, we also just cover MLB in general, and the trade deadline is kind of our biggest day of the year, really.
Maybe.
And I don't think it's particularly close. And when it was one of the busiest trade deadlines, and also the most surprising in terms of like what happened and didn't happen, there was just so much to cover. I mean, again, you were traveling too. I still don't know how you did that. But at the same time, like, It was a lot to cover. I didn't realize how tired I was until the weekend. And then once everything stopped, I was like, oh, yeah, I just need to sleep for 12 hours. That's what needs to happen. Slowly getting there and, you know, getting back to the swing of things, kind of the regular pace. But it's been fun, and I'm ready to talk some prospects because I missed doing it last week for sure.
I am too. It was definitely a departure to not have our show last Tuesday. But luckily, we got a lot to talk about today. Last Tuesday, taking it off, was to let it breathe and let it collect this week so we had more data points. We appreciate everybody who read along with us during the trade deadline, but we are here now to answer more of your questions if you got them, but talk about the pieces that we saw move and players who are now maybe unblocked, players whose fates got even worse after the trade deadline maneuvering. Like Eric said, I flew to the National the morning on Friday, right after the trade deadline went down, saw prospect cards to the nth degree. Everybody
got broke.
Yeah, everybody. I set myself at a $150 budget, and I felt like I was shortchanging myself. And I was like, well, by the end of this, I'm going to have gone over 250 or whatever. But to be perfectly honest, it was actually really easy to stay pretty within budget. And I would have gone under had I not spent $84 to meet Ozzie Smith, because the prospect stuff and the high end, it was, everything was just so high end that you were either sifting through $5 boxes trying to get something weird for your personal collection, or you were dropping thousands on, you know, graded Colson Montgomerys, or, you know, a guy had a crate of Ichiro Bowman Chrome 2001 and Topps Chrome graded rookies and X-Fractors that he signed retroactively that were slabbed and authenticated. So, I mean, that's not prospect stuff technically, but these were, you know, people were building their own auto graded rookies and selling them for $7,500. And so I thought it was going to be tough to stay within budget. It was actually shockingly easy because I was shopping in a bunch of discount bins and enjoying my time. But man, it's, you're either spending $12,000 because you're selling your wares as well, or you can walk in and just say, wow, I was really impressed. I saw a lot of crazy stuff and I got three things for $83 and I was happy.
Yeah. Again, better view than me. I mean, one, because I know we have a lot of fun video content coming, a lot of interviews with media stuff, but also, I mean, again, I would have been in trouble there because I'm like, I have things that I kind of have my eye on, like grail type cards. I'm sure I would have run into a couple of them there. Not just prospect cards, but I mean, like I correct a lot of Greg Maddux stuff as well. And there's a few cards that I would love to find, but it's also probably best that I didn't find. So I'm glad you had a good time kind of doing the museum route when it comes to, you know, going to a card show. But ultimately, you know, I think it was probably best that you went because you have kind of like the Zen-like patience where you're like, no, 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 I'm not going to spend. Whereas I would have like had come home and had to hire a divorce attorney.
Well, sure. I mean, that's what happens. Thank you for joining us on the show, you know, supporting Eric's addiction and potentially mine as well. Robert and I did two shows from the National. You can catch those on our channel now. They're on the video section instead of the live tab. So navigate over there, check them out, really. And again, tons of great interview content coming on the fan-sided channel. If you want to read Eric's work and more, go on and head over to the Baseball Insiders feed on fansided.com, as well as a number of network sites. As he mentioned, we covered the trade deadline like crazy, House that Hank built, Climbing Tails Hill, Eric's favorite site. You read us in plenty of spots talking prospects, big leaguers, movement, what have you. And obviously, we thank everyone for doing that. Join us in the Discord. Hit that join button right below. If you've got questions between shows, enough card chatter, although I never say that, and I'm sure we'll get back to it before the end of the show. Now let's talk trade deadline and potentially people whose values have risen maybe in that particular market after the deadline. Let's start off, simple baseline. We saw a good amount of movement. We saw some surprising packages. I would say the caliber of prospects that changed hands, a little bit lower than I maybe thought prior to the deadline. The blockbusters, it didn't take a top 100 guy to get Eugenio Suarez. The Pirates, whether they had access to better prospects or not, like they say they did, didn't take a top five Yankees prospect to go ahead and deal David Bednar. Who are the favorite prospects you had who ended up did move them?
So I tend to agree with you. Like I just assume like so much hype was around Yanuel Suarez for sure. As even as a rental, people thought that there might be like big time prospects involved in that deal. And then if the two big relievers that were kind of sort of available, if they turned out they both got moved in Joan Duran, as well as Mason Miller, that there was going to be big time prospect packages involved in those. And my problem with this is that I don't like giving up a lot of big time prospects for relievers just because it's literally the most volatile commodity in baseball. So you're kind of giving up almost a more certain asset than you are in terms of going at the versus going after a reliever. But I think that the Athletics did extremely well to get what they got. They got Leo DeVries, who's arguably the best prospect in baseball. Kind of depends on who you talk to. I think that if you ask both Adam and I, we'd say Connor Griffin, but at the same time, you know, it's hard to argue with a Leo DeVries who might have some of the best upside in the minors. And being able to get him again for a reliever, and in addition to more than that, they didn't just get DeVries, they got some other pieces that are interesting as well. So he was number one for me for sure, that of like the big time prospects. But again, the Phillies giving up what they gave up to go get Duran was kind of wild to me because they give up Mick Abel, who I think is, it's, you can call him a prospect, but he was already contributing in the big leagues and was already like a really good like quality starter, and they give up him, and you also give Eduardo Tate up, who might have the most raw power in the minor leagues. I mean, again, catcher prospect or not, I don't really care with him. I mean, he might end up being a DH. I still like the arm. I still think he can stick behind the plate. But he hits the ball so hard that if he just grows into his bat like a lot of people think he's going to, that deal's going to look like a steal because in Duran's case, he's a power relief arm. I think he's going to be great this year, and I love him. I truly do. He might be great next year. But after that, the track record of get those guys with that profile lasting any longer than that is not good. Versus you get like some real certainty with Abel, and then you also get, and you also get Tate, who has kind of that upside play. Love him. Like, I love that move for the Twins. I'd like less what they did overall in terms of basically selling anyone that wasn't screwed down somewhere. But overall, in terms of getting what you get for, a reliever, which is a volatile asset, asset to me, I think those teams did really well. Beyond that, again, it was just not a particularly exciting trade deadline to me in terms of like the prospects that actually got moved around. But again, those two trades were probably the easiest ones to identify. There were some fun prospects like guys you could take flyers on in some of the other deals, but a lot of those were kind of more, kind of like sane rental prices, I guess is the best way I know how to describe it, versus what we've seen in previous years where rental guys, again, like Eugenio Suarez did not command a huge package somehow. And that's kind of maybe the most surprising part is this, like some of them compared to some of the names that got moved, the prospects that didn't really match up with them.
Yeah. And I'm glad that Locklear gets an opportunity now that he might not have in Seattle. And he's immediately up with Arizona, has a big league homer already in 14 ABs. Jerry DePoto was apparently talking Locklear up at the Hall of Fame induction of Ichiro. So whether or not he was laying the groundwork with reporters for a forthcoming trade deadline deal or just genuinely loves the kid, who knows? Not sure what he could have really accomplished by extolling Locklear's virtues to, a bunch of mouthpieces rather than the executives who actually could make the decision. But a player I like and a cheaper price for Suarez than any of us thought. What you're mentioning about the Duran trade and Tate and Abel is the reason why there were obviously many viral tweets going around asking who had the worst trade deadline. And I responded to one because I don't know why I do anything I do on Twitter. But I said, how is it not the Pirates? And somebody screenshotted the photo of the Twins Instagram grid that was just their 9 goodbye posts in a row. It might have even been 12. And it's a valid counter. I don't think the Twins had a good trade deadline. But the return, Abel and Tate, there, I preferred that to anything the Pirates managed during the course of the entire trade deadline. And say what you will about the Twins, and a lot of people will say a lot of things, and they are clearing house ahead of a sale, and it's an embarrassing look on the whole. But they had a plan. I don't know what the Pirates' plan was. So when it comes to who my surprise wasn't traded from the big league roster, Andrew Heaney, IKF, Tommy Pham. But in the prospect verse, the guys who could have moved in a David Bednar deal didn't. And Rafael Flores is a great number 2 in a trade package, but he ended up being the number 1. We know the Pirates are scouting Carlos LaGrange. He stayed put. Brian Cashman held on to his top 7 prospects and wasn't forced to move off any of them. Now, you can say he should have. You can say he should have found a way to get Mason Miller. This is not a Brian Cashman rules podcast, but I was very surprised that he hung on to LaGrange specifically. But I'm wondering who fits the bill here for you? Who are you surprised was not traded?
So there's 2 names that come to mind. And one is kind of another one of those teams where I'm not really sure what the plan was, and that's the Cubs. I don't know why they didn't trade Owen Casey to just try to get a better starting pitcher. Now, again, this is someone who truly loves Mike Soroka. And, if you want to place that bet, obviously he's like immediately hurt. So that didn't work out very well. But at the same time, like they need starting pitching. And maybe you don't want to give up a Matt Shaw. Maybe you don't want to give up some of like the guys in the low minors because they don't have that value yet. They're more lottery tickets. So, but you have Casey, who's like a hot hitting prospect that you don't really have room for right now necessarily. And maybe you want to use him to kind of upgrade another part of your roster that would matter. Now, the one caveat to this is that not much starting pitching moved at all. That was like the one demographic this year that we didn't see much movement. We saw some bats move. We saw some bullpen arms move because we always do. But starters didn't really move. And I'm just wondering if the asking price was just crazy. But if the asking price being crazy involved just having like Casey as a centerpiece, I think that was a mistake. I think that that's a move they should have made. The other one I'm just surprised is the Mariners. I thought the Mariners had a really good trade deadline. If for no other reason, they didn't have to give up really all that much. I like Lockyer. I like him fine. But at the same time, the name that I circled was Harry Ford because, again, he's not going to be playing anytime soon. They got this guy, Cal Raleigh, who I hear is pretty good. And it just felt like he was going to be one of the pieces that they were going to use to address another option, another spot on the roster, and they just didn't. Lazaro Montes is another option, but I think that his upside was a little bit too much to ultimately be swayed to move him. Again, it's just those are two, like, those are some guys where I just like thought, like, if there's big trades that happen at the trade deadline involving their teams, like, they're going to be in those trades. And it just didn't really happen. Again, it's just the rental prices stayed reasonable, and the guys who had team control were like two relievers, and those, there were some real prospects in those trades. We didn't see a lot of those, though. So it's just, I'm a little bit surprised, especially Ford with the Mariners. I just, again, he just felt like a guy that was going to get moved because, again, I think they like Montes, and I think they like Emerson enough to kind of maybe hold them back and maybe try to push him on folks instead. But, you know, he's a very good catching prospect, so I was a little bit surprised to see him that he didn't get moved.
Yeah, and reading between the lines almost, you know, we're not in there with Jerry DePoto, but it kind of felt like they were setting the stage for, we are fine moving Harry Ford, and then it just didn't cost that to get Suarez, and certainly didn't cost that to get Naylor either. So he stays put, and yeah, as someone who watches the Yankees every single day, it's starting to feel a little bit like an Oswald Peraza, Everson Pereira situation, slightly elevated. Who knows? But I think we're all surprised that a move or a match has not been found yet. Now, we are getting word of plenty of MLB debuts. Locklear gets his call. There was just a Pirates shuffle today for some reason. You know, Johan Oviedo goes down. Cam Sanders comes up. So that's not Bubba Chandler. But we are looking for prospects who are going to be debuting in the second final 2 months of the season. Is there anybody who has yet to get a chance yet, but their path is clear in August and September that you're now watching?
Not particularly, at least not ones that moved, if that makes any sense. Like, I think that maybe now the Cubs will have to, like, it's almost like the Cubs might have to promote Owen Casey because otherwise their trade deadline looked pretty stupid, right?
Yeah.
So maybe giving him a chance. I could see a world where, again, the asking price for a lot of teams was that they wanted big league ready pitching back in deals, and teams just weren't really wanting to do that necessarily. Obviously, Mick Abel's like kind of the cheaty answer just because he's already been in the big leagues and he's going to get his chance. But in terms of guys who haven't made their debut yet, maybe you say Owen Casey has more of a path now, but at the same time, like, I don't think that, I think that the things have changed a little bit in the sense that the guys who we think we're going to get promoted have already been promoted. I don't think we're going to see a lot of promotions in August and September, period. Unless there's like an injury, or it's like the Triple A shuttle where, you know, contenders are just throwing relievers and, you know, in the minor leagues left and right and just kind of shuttling guys in to get fresh arms in. Beyond that, I don't see a lot of guys getting that call necessarily unless something pops up.
Yeah, somebody weird is coming up for the Yankees, and we'll figure out who that is later today because they demoted Jake Bird. Hell of a deadline acquisition by Brian Cashman. Guy sticks around for two fucking days. But they demote him to bring Mark Leiter Jr. back. They just DFA'd JT Brubaker, too. So somebody weird coming up to the Yankees bullpen. Maybe somebody boring like JV and Sandridge or whatever. No disrespect. But we'll have to see. You're going to be more of those. And yes, Curvelo is already up for the Texas Rangers. I saw him celebrating the walk-off yesterday, so shout out to Uncle Ted.
And again, a couple names that are kind of in the comments here. Moises Balseros has already made his debut, so like my cousin wasn't like thinking. He's like already on the 40-man roster, is already in the conversation. As for Dylan Beavers, until the Orioles demonstrate their willingness to call up anybody before they absolutely have to, case in point, Samuel Basayo still sitting at AAA. I don't buy it. Even though I agree that Beavers is playing very well in the minor leagues and he probably should get an opportunity, I would have liked to see him get moved somewhere where he'd actually get that opportunity. I just don't trust the Orioles to do it. I love what the Orioles did building that farm system, how they've managed it, and how they've ultimately implemented it. I hate it. So,
yeah, agreed. Beavers should be up, and especially they should be in the trial period right now in Baltimore, but apparently they are not. And they should bring up TJ Rumfield, the Yankees. Rumfield, a very interesting player, having a near 900 OPS this year, but with Paul Goldschmidt up there, performing solidly, doing his veteran leadership, they're just not going to disrespect Paul Goldschmidt with a DFA like that. You know, I guess it depends on whether Ben Rice is going to be a full-time backup catcher or not. But it's a wise move and an interesting player, but I don't think the Yankees quite have the room for that right now. I don't think there's really anyone in this bucket, frankly, based on the returns that we saw. But are there any top prospects you would say that teams are going to regret trading at this deadline? It feels like hindsight's always 2020. You can look back on a Cole Drake and whatnot, depending on where the Rangers go from here and if Merrill Kelly has a bad 2 months. So, you know, there could be regrets formed retroactively. But at first blush, I don't think – it just feels like teams paid the prices they had to pay, and those prices were 20% lower than they've been in previous years. I don't see any just instantaneous regrets, but I'm wondering if there's a name that pops to you.
Again, this is just me, and I understand this is the price tag for controllable relievers who, like, can pitch in high leverage situations. But DeVries and Tate in particular are like names that can really make you wish you had made different choices. There's high upside bats. They have like the potential to be like regular all-stars in terms of the tools they possess. Again, you have to pay the price. So you're not going to get Mason Miller if you don't give up a guy like DeVries or like a top 10, top 15 prospect in baseball. The A's just aren't going to move him. They're just not going to. They're like kind of sort of good, so they kind of wanted to keep him around for as long as they could. And he was also cheap. So they're not going to move that trade chip unless they're going to give something up like that. But like again, for a reliever, if Mason Miller has Tommy John and then comes back and he's throwing 3 miles an hour slower, you know, for the rest of his career, that could still be a pretty good reliever. But you're pretty upset when you lose a guy like DeVries, who might be just a perennial all star. And then the same thing goes with Tate, like a guy if he's hitting 35 home runs a year and you gave him up for Joan Duran, who blew his shoulder out in a year and a half. Those are the risks that I personally don't like taking. But that is just what the price is going to be to get those guys with that amount of team control. So I understand why they did it, but those are the kinds of guys that I think could ultimately bite teams.
Yeah, and Kyle Schwarber walk year, and Kyle Schwarber MVP season, Citizens Bank Park rocking again. I mean, the Phillies need to take these types of chances. If any team does, Dave Dombrowski and the Phillies do, and Duran's couple of early entrances into CBP have been as electric as meaning Philadelphia, hoped that they would be. So you pay the price now, and hopefully you don't live to regret it. You certainly might, though, and that's why if you do pay that price, a smart executive trades a piece like Tate to the AL Central if you're in Philadelphia so that you can just go, hey, he looks great for the Minnesota Twins. We see them once a year for 3 games. So best of luck to him and best of luck to us. All right, back to the action. We'll appreciate your questions as well. We'll get to a few of those if you've got them before the show ends. But I do want to get back to the last week of minor league action that was somewhat obscured by the trade deadline and all of our focus on the rumor mill and anticipation. Who played well and who struggled while people were not necessarily watching this week?
A lot of fun names this week, both on both sides, truly. We'll start with the risers first. Our favorite, Josh Nixon Garcia, aka The Password. One of the prospects for the Red Sox has kind of gotten a lot more press lately, especially with a lot of those guys, the big three sort of moving up and, you know, doing things in the big leagues, not as much press on them. So he's kind of gotten a chance to shine. He was fantastic this last week. Went 10 for 24, 4 home runs, 13 RBIs against just 6 strikeouts. Again, just did really, really well for himself, hit for a bunch of power, and was also able to kind of get on base at a good clip. Love what to see what out of him. But at the same time, again, I wonder a little bit with that organization if they're ever going to implement and use him appropriately, because they have kind of the same sort of thing with the Orioles where they try to do things and they kind of succeed despite themselves, not necessarily because of anything that they do correctly. Another one's the Twins, Walker Jenkins. I love this kid in the draft when he came out. And again, top 5 draft pick, truly a very, very good quality guy that both has floor that you don't necessarily see for a guy this young, but also like big, big time upside. Has had times this year where he's kind of struggled off and on, but he had a really good week last week, hit 500, 12 for 24, hit 3 home runs, stole a couple bases, had more walks than strikeouts. Again, just hit for power, showed off the speed, was really, really good. And finally, there's other pitchers that might have had better weeks, I guess. Sam Aldegheri is an example of a guy who had a good week last week. But I kind of feel like I've made fun of Brendan Sproat a lot during the course of these podcasts. And I wanted to shout out the fact that he had a good start last week. Went 5 innings, struck out nine batters. The walks are still a problem. He still walked 3 batters. But this is the kind of start you had seen from him last year, that he has this kind of stuff where he can have these kind of games where you just can't square him up, even if he's giving you free base runners. So those are kind of the 3 guys that I circled to talk about this week. Again, fun group this week of names that we know that also kind of lived up to it.
And this might be the most star power we've ever had in the You Suck section, otherwise known as the Fallers. They certainly did not fall off the prospect map. These are guys who are all going to be making a significant impact soon, probably at the major league level within the next 2 years. But yeah, we've got a star-studded crop of people who struggled over the past week.
Yeah, and again, like I hope that folks don't like think these are not like, you know, the fire them into the sun list or anything like that. And unfortunately, Robert Chandler's been a name that's been on the list on the wrong side a few times lately. And that's kind of unfortunate because, again, it seemed like he was so close to getting the opportunity. And then he sort of started struggling. I wonder how much of that is a mental thing where, like, he thought he was going to get promoted and then they're just not going to let him come up. But over his last three starts, 14.2 innings pitched, 12 earned runs. Does have the 13 strikeouts, which is nice. But 8 walks over that same 14, 15 innings is less nice. Again, the commands just kind of left him. I don't really know what to make of that since I haven't really gotten a ton of looks at him. But he just hasn't been playing all that well. He had a bad stretch earlier in the season. Then he kind of came back and was pitching well again. And now he's kind of in another funk. So I hope that he's able to get out of this. And I suspect with that level of talent that he'll be fine. But if this keeps going up and on, off and on, you wonder if maybe there's something physical going on as well. Hopefully that's not the case. And then there's Jesus Mate, a guy that I love. And again, this is a teenager. So, like, this is not like he is making his full season debut. This is not weird that a kid this young is going to be struggling in full season ball for a stretch. But he only has one hit in his last 5 games. Again, still hitting really well. Has drawn a bunch of walks this year. Has stolen 40 bases already. You should not be worried about Mate right now. You should not. But again, it's worth noting that he hasn't played particularly well. And the same thing goes with Zaire Hope. He's had a more balanced year than Mate has. Again, he's hitting for power. I think he has 12 home runs this year. Also stealing some bases. Kind of a well-rounded game. A really exciting Dodgers prospect that I think is going to get on a lot of people's radar going into next year, because I think he's going to start pushing for some, decisions on LA, in terms of LA, what they're going to do with their roster. But again, same sort of thing with Mate. Only one hit over his last 5 games. Not that weird. He's still relatively inexperienced. I think he's at high A now, and he's just going to have fun run into, teams that have that know how to attack him, and he has to make those adjustments. I'm not worried about Hope whatsoever. I suspect that he's going to get another promotion before the year is done. But again, those are kind of 3 guys for me that, just didn't quite live up to the billing this week.
Yeah. And again, not like Eric said, we're not impugning them, but it's just, you got to take advantage of the opportunities when you do have a chance to talk about their struggles, because they are so few and far between, especially for Mate. All right. Well, I'm going to close this out with a question to make sure that we address Baseball Tost, who's always here. We love the people who are always watching the Prospect Show. Audience building a little bit today. So thank you for showing up. Robert Murray and I will be back live tomorrow afternoon at 1 p.m. Eastern time to talk about the start of the week that has been. We have recapped the trade deadline plenty. And again, those videos are on the video upload feed on the Baseball Insiders, not the live feed. So if you're looking for them, just head on over to videos. We got 2 shows from the weekend at the National. We thank the folks at the National once again. But want to address Baseball Toss, who's a White Sox person who's always looking about the latest Brandon Montgomery updates, looking for good news. Wondering why the White Sox maybe didn't do more or trade Luis Robert Jr. with the intention of picking up that option. Robert Murray on the Saturday show was a little bit skeptical that they actually are going to do that. Might have been the Sunday show. But he's not taking them at their word, or at least their reported word. Adrian Hauser goes to Tampa Bay, which is not a spot that most of us believed he would go. I'm not sure why Tampa Bay wanted a rental righty. There's no waiver trade deadline. Like, there's no August. They can't get anything for him on August 31st. But I guess I'm surprised the White Sox didn't do more with the Talkmans of the world and sort of their depth pieces. But what are you thinking about why they sort of stood pat?
Well, I think for starters, their asking price on Luis Robert Jr. is just like absurd. Like, everyone in the league is calling the White Sox bluff. They're just like, no, we're going to get value for him. We think he's really talented. And if you're not going to give up real value to get him, then we're not going to give him up. That just feels very much like a Jerry Reinsdorf, don't trade him until you get a good offer because he's our best asset sort of thing. If we're paying him, then we need to get, and we think he's going to be good. We'd look stupid if we gave him up for nothing now. That feels like something that Jerry would do. Now, in terms of like getting rid of the rental pieces and stuff, again, I just think that they've played so poorly that there's a real risk that if they continue to sell off more and more, that they're just not going to have fans show up to games anymore. And again, that kind of gets down to a revenue problem and an ownership problem. And again, we know that ownership is going to be transitioning away from Reinsdorf over time here. So you wonder maybe if they're trying to keep the revenue streams up a little bit. I don't know if those guys even move the needle all that much if you move them, except for Robert Jr., if you move him for even a reasonable trade package. But the White Sox are the ones that messed this up. They mishandled Robert's market from the beginning when he got hurt, didn't play very well. Then he had 1 year where he played well and he bounced back, and that was your opportunity to move him. But they thought that he was coming back and he was going to turn into like the next big thing there. So they kept him, and now they're kind of having to eat the cost of that. I don't think they're going to find very many takers at all for him, unless they're willing to eat some of the money on that deal, because he's just not playing well. He's just, if you watch him play, he's not a good baseball player. And if that's the case, then why is the team going to empty their farm system out to go get him?
Yeah, I appreciate the question. As always, they're stuck between a rock and a hard place now with Robert Jr., and they're sticking with the hard place. Andrew Lee, can we see Biscuit? Unfortunately, Biscuit had a long road trip and is sleeping like crazy, but I will send a picture of Biscuit to the Discord later because you guys have earned it. I'll send a Biscuit road trip pic, and if you aren't in the Discord, all the more reason to get there because you get free biscuits. You know, along with the insight that Robert and I and Eric as well will give you in there. So hit that join button, hit us up in the Discord with your questions between shows. Tag Eric if you got prospect stuff. We are more than happy to answer them. We will see you next Tuesday right back here at noon Eastern time, and when Eric and I are both a little bit more well rested, I think, probably.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes. But I mean, I don't think we can keep up the same pace as last week. So
no, we're at the very least. We might not be well rested, but we are guaranteed to be better rested than we are.
Yeah, we're not going further downhill. At least we can hope. That said, both Adam and I's teams are pretty bad, so maybe we end up being in worse shape when you see us next week. So bad.
But we'll see you on next week's show. Robert and I will see you tomorrow again, 1 o'clock Eastern. Hit us in the Discord. Read Eric's prospect accompaniment on the Baseball Insiders feed on fansided.com. fansided.com/baseball-insiders. Also put up an article about a Dennis Eckersley interview we did at the National. Subscribe to the Fansided YouTube channel and Instagram and TikTok. Follow those if you haven't, because there's going to be a lot more great stuff. Trevor Hoffman, Jim Kelly, I spoke to CC Sabathia, Yadier Molina, White Sox perfect game artist Phil Umber. Like the list goes on and on in many different directions. And football, I mean, Jim Kelly, we're talking about Bill Laimbeer, the Detroit Pistons, just on and on and on. So join us there, subscribe. You'll see some great stuff. We'll continue to upload those. Shout out to everyone at the National. Shout out to Eric Cole. Shout out to everyone who watched today and listened on the audio feed. We will see you or hear you, you'll hear us next week. Robert and I will be back tomorrow, 1 o'clock Eastern. Until then, take care, everybody.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.